Hello everyone, welcome to Stall 7, Ulti World's AUDL podcast. I am Chris McGlynn, he is Alex Rubin. We are back from another episode and we have a ton to talk about. And to help us break it all down, Brian Jones will be back. We have a ton of questions this week for our Coach's Corner, both from our Discord and from our Twitter account. So plenty to get into. And we're going to just get, before we even get into the games, Alex, we now have actual AUDL lines and future props for on DraftKings, which has been a long time coming. We've been asking them to do it since week one on this show.
Yeah, I've I spent a significant amount of my, was it Friday last week when they announced it, like texting everybody who I know in the like legal states, like, hey, do you have DraftKings? Do you have DraftKings? Like, I'm trying to get in on this. But it's not legal in California. I couldn't find anyone who was willing to put the bets in for me. So we passed on this week, but very exciting to see both the like legitimacy of an app like DraftKings having AUDL lines, but also they're good lines. Like, they've, you know, they made me think a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I had a lot of fun looking through them too. I know I'm actually going to be joining Charlie this week. We're going to be doing a weekly column to announce our best bets for the week, kind of give a little bit of betting advice on what the DraftKings lines are. Maybe talk about some future props in there as well. They have, you can go in and bet on who you think the 2021 AUDL champion will be this year, which I already know it's probably a very good thing. It is not legal in Connecticut, or not, like, whatever. Yeah, it's not legal in Connecticut yet, because I absolutely would have smashed the money line on New York this weekend. And that didn't work out because the New York Empire went down to Atlanta and ended up getting beat by a single point in what was one of the best games we have seen all year. Atlanta winning 21-22. Alex, just take me through your initial impressions of this game, because there's a ton to break down.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta, like, their second half was crazy. They kept getting breaks. Antoine Davis really, really stood out to me. No Parker Bray on the offense in the game. John Stubbs moved over to the D-line. I think Davis took on a much bigger role in the offense. It was much more aggressive cutting deep, which normally you wouldn't think to do against the New York defense that features some really good defenders. But Antoine Davis can just get it done.
He was open every time. Like, I don't understand what New York was doing. I mean, they put good players on him. They had Marquez Brownlee on him. They had Jeff Babbitt on him. And he just kept getting open. And I think some of it was how New York was playing stylistically defensively, which I actually really liked. They really made Atlanta think a little bit. But it just ended up with Antoine Davis being open deep way too often. Now, here's the most ridiculous thing, I think, which is he put together a monster stat line. He had 6 goals, 3 assists. He did have a drop, which was a, you know, quite a questionable drop as well. It was a really tough grab. Here's probably the most ridiculous stat of all. He had 7 hockey assists. 7 hockey assists. That lets you know how involved in this offense he was. I looked at this and I was like, wow. My initial impression after watching the game and then looking at the stats was he was only +8 in this game. That's the type of impact that Antoine Davis had. And that's not the they had some great performance all the way around. Austin Taylor was great once again. Carl Ekwurzel is becoming a name to know for this Atlanta Hustle team. He went up Sky Jeff Babbitt at one point, which was just wild on a play. And Babbitt, as we've seen, has the second, as we know of right now, we're going to talk about Orion Cable a little bit later, second best vertical in that greatest bag challenge so far this season. So for Ekwurzel to go up there and get it was really impressive. I was also impressed, like, Tanner Robinson had a really good game for Atlanta.
I was going to bring him up.
Yeah, just a really strong game all the way around. The zone working to full effect, causing a ton of turnovers. New York led by a goal at halftime, and then the third quarter was just kind of where they started to fall apart a little bit. A couple of just like miscues of not looking to see where some of those poached defenders were, moving the disc a little bit too fast. But I got to give New York credit because they clawed back in the fourth quarter, which really impressed me. I kind of thought they were done when they were down by 3 with about 4 minutes left, I think I want to say. It was maybe like 19-16 or something like that, 15, and they they pushed this back into the point where they had a shot at the buzzer.
Yeah, I mean, we knew before that it'd be fun watching this offense take on the Atlanta zone. And I think in the fourth quarter when they were chasing, watching Osgar and Jack Williams and, Ben Yacht try to carve up the zone, I think you could argue they had the most success again. I know, Atlanta obviously lost the game to DC, but I think, at least they put out a blueprint for other teams to follow of, if you have throwers who are talented enough to squeeze a few, downfield through the windows. I think John Lithgow had a few like kind of popping through the middle where none of the defenders could cover him because the offense was so spaced out. So definitely not a, I'm not trying to say it's like a moral victory for New York. I don't know how much those count, but definitely some things to learn from their good offensive performance.
Definitely. I mean, Ryan Osgar, fantastic game. 6 assists, 5 goals in the contest, which is just huge numbers to put up. Ben Yacht, 5 goals. Or sorry, excuse me, 5 assists, 4 goals, and a block. And John Lithgow, an assist, 6 goals, and a block of his own. I mean, yeah, New York came to play. Jeff Babbitt had 4 blocks, which is wild to me. But they almost seem to be take the anti-DC approach, if you know what I mean there. DC was contented. We're going to chip it away. We're going to chip away. New York spread them out. And I think that actually worked pretty well. They were patient. They swung the disc. They looked for their openings downfield. And sometimes it didn't pan out. It definitely put them into some tough situations here or there. I will say, I think New York's D-line offense needs a little bit of a kind of step up in the next couple of weeks.
They need a John Stubbs to cross over.
Which credit to Miranda Roth-Nolis for making that call, especially with Parker Bray out. I was stunned to see Subs playing defense, but worked out very well in her favor because her team ended up coming out. Atlanta, now I'm gonna make this sure I got this right, but I think they're 8-1 on the season, which is just
Seven and
seven
one.
and one, 7-1 on the season. So I knew I had 8 in there somewhere. 8 total games, 7-1 on the season, and they lead the Atlantic Division by a pretty comfortable margin at this point. The rest of their schedule looks fairly easy, with the obvious exception that they play Raleigh in the final week of the season, and that is going to be a game to circle on your calendars, everybody. So it looks like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Atlanta has already locked up a playoff spot. They look like a championship weekend team right now, maybe even a championship contender.
It wouldn't surprise, like we were talking about this last week with the zone, right? Like it's something different that other teams don't do. I know they don't want it every point, but it just changes the game to their favor in a way that I don't think any other team has like a trick like that in their back pocket.
Not yet, definitely not. All right, we're going to shift now to the Central Division because we got a rematch between Chicago and Minnesota. And we were kind of expecting, as if you've listened to last week's show, Alex and I picked Minnesota breeze. Well, that's not even close to right. Minnesota wind chill. Chilly breeze, I think, is maybe where I was going with that. Sorry, Pavel's. I've been watching too many of Pavel's weekly recaps.
Hasn't
So,
caught them yet.
I know, not
I've
yet,
been
not yet
missing the
this week.
recaps.
I know. It's been a bummer. They're really good content too. It's fantastic. Anyway, so the point is here, Minnesota had beaten the Union head to head last time they played, and so we felt pretty good. They were coming back. They played at home. They had looked pretty good their last couple of weeks, and they just weren't very sharp in this game. It was very windy. It was definitely a pretty sloppy game all the way around. But credit to Chicago's offense, because the sloppy points were always when they were playing defense. They did not have a great game in terms of break chances. I want to say they went 6 for 18, which is not great, right? I mean, that sounds really bad. But contrast that to the fact that Minnesota ended up going 1 for 6 on break chances, and you realize, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad. So I think that's really where this game was won and lost. Chicago's defense, they played a lot of those long, grinded out points, and they won those points in the end. Minnesota, 45%, 15 of 33 on offensive break chances, or sorry, offensive hold opportunities. So just not as clean of a game as we would expect for them. A couple drops in the end zone, a couple of throwaways, Chicago running some junky zones, and Minnesota just not being patient enough to work through it, trying to throw over it, leading to some turnovers. I think this game was closer than the 4-point scoreline would indicate. It was 20-16 as the final. Am I on track there? What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think it was, I agree, it was closer than the score indicated, but Minnesota never seemed like they were really in the game. You know, like Chicago jumped out to like an early, I think they got a break on like their second or third point of the game. And then like they had like a 2 or 3 goal kind of cushion the whole way.
Yeah, I mean
I don't know,
they
they had
definitely
one break.
seem to
You
be.
don't beat Chicago if you can only score one break at home. Like,
You don't beat pretty much any team if you only have one break. Unless maybe you're the Detroit Mechanics. Like, that's the only team you could probably beat with just one break. It's just, yeah, it definitely seemed like Minnesota just wasn't clicking this week. And I don't know exactly what it was. If it was just, Chicago, the defense they played worked really well. If it was just not being patient enough, which could be a product of the defense that Chicago played. I want to give Chicago credit here because they played, it was like night and day compared to how they played a couple weeks ago when they faced off against Minnesota. And their offense was good. I mean, in a game where, they had 20 turnovers, they still went 14 of 22 on hold opportunities, which means they punched it in 63% of the time on the first possession. So to me, that lets me know that, okay, they did this right. Like, they played well offensively. And they avoided the turnovers there. Most of Chicago's turnovers came from their D line playing offense. So, and that's where you could afford to have the turnovers, right? Not that you want to ever have turnovers, but if you're going to have them somewhere, that's probably the place that you're feel a little bit better about it happening.
Yeah, want to give a shout out to Jeff Weiss in his season debut, had 5 goals.
He was great. Wasn't wearing the right number, I'll tell you that much. I don't know what number, whose number he was wearing. He forgot his jersey. I had to text a friend of mine who I know lives in Chicago halfway through the game. I'm like, who is this guy? Who's wearing number 22 right now? I think it was what it was. I was like, I'm like looking through the roster. I'm like, I know this guy looks really familiar. I totally could not place him. So
I
yes,
did like
Jeff Weiss,
also on the
great game.
broadcast. I think one of my favorite little like quirks of the game was that Eli Artimakis was wearing number 2. I think the
Okay.
announcers just like looked at the wrong slot on their roster sheet. Kirk
Yeah.
Gibson wears number 1, and for like a point that he scored, they called him Kirk Gibson.
Well, yeah, that's not right.
I'm
Well,
like, oh.
that, you know what? Eli Aremakis having a good season, good player, but he just peaked right there if they thought he was Kirk Gibson, I'll be
Yes, that's
honest.
it.
If you're getting confused for one of the greatest men's ultimate players of all time, you're doing something right. Jack Shanahan, great game as well. An assist, 3 goals, 2 blocks. Nick Vogt, though, you feel good about this for your fantasy team. 4 goals,
Goals.
so it's a
Let's
nice
go.
consolation prize
Great
there.
pick.
Yeah. And Brandon Matisse, an assist, 3 blocks in this one. So he's getting it done defensively. One of the few guys getting the turns. Minnesota actually had more blocks in this game, for whatever that's
Well,
worth.
that, I mean, it was windy. Pavel's
Yeah,
gonna put up
very, very
shots.
windy game. Yeah, I think Chicago's defense didn't always set itself up for blocks. It more just set itself up to force turnovers. So, all
Which
right, we won't belabor the point there any longer. Chicago moves back atop the Central Division. The Chads back in control, as Pavel Giannis likes to call them. But we're going to talk now about the West Division because this is kind of where the meat of the action came this weekend. And San Diego had a tough Texas twosome. They had to go down. They played Dallas in the first matchup, and Dallas just gave them the business. Went down and just took care of it. It really kind of seemed like they were pretty easy. They were missing a couple top players. Kyle Hanke balled out in what will be his final game of the season. He'll be undergoing wrist surgery, but Abe Coffin was out. We're hearing that Jay Fruit is a little bit banged up. And it didn't really seem to matter. Dallas won by 4 points. They looked the far better team. And I think just they outplayed San Diego on their home turf, and it wasn't even close.
yeah, Gabe Hernandez as a center handler this game, 67 for 68. He's
Turns
taking
out
on a
he like really
massive
good when you put him
volume.
on offense.
Yeah, Matt Jackson was 51 of 51.
Yeah, he had
Henry
5 assists in this one
Caruda
too.
was 33 for 33. Is I'm like sorting the game by completions, and the top four by completions are all Roughnecks. That tells you everything
Yeah,
you need to know there.
this seems to be happening a lot though, because San Diego, I think it's just a bit of a product of the way they play, but they tend to kind of go with, I think they try to eat up more chunks of yardage quickly. It's not like they huck it constantly, but they don't swing quite as, I don't know what it is exactly, but like comparison of number of throws attempted, Dallas had 321, San Diego had 168. That's it. Like, they usually are in that range, whereas Dallas tends to be, 200 plus almost every week. The problem is like that can work for you if you complete more than 89% of your passes then, which is what San Diego did again. It was another week where they were below 90%. That's just not a winning formula. They
I
have
mean,
way
they're
too many turnovers right now.
yeah, they're missing Paul Lally this week, who
Yeah,
had
that
been
hurt.
pretty significant member of their backfield. Goose Helton led the game with four turnovers. I mean, he also
Yeah.
had four goals and four assists.
And a
But
block. Come on, give him the block.
he got a block too. But and
Thank you.
he should not be picking up a dead disc against the
No.
double team on the sideline.
No,
And the
definitely
fact that
not.
they
He's
don't
just,
have a
that's not his game. And we've been
right.
saying that all year on here, and it's where San Diego has struggled this year, is when they have to put Goose in a center handler or, whatever high volume throwing role. He's best as an initiator. We saw it. I know he didn't get a chance to play this week, but last week, when finally Dallas moved Akoffin downfield and let him be the initiator because they put Gabe Hernandez in that center handler role. Well, now Hernandez is built to do that. And he might not be putting up, I mean, he's putting up great completion numbers. It's not like we're looking at, oh, he put up seven assists in this game. But the offense runs much better when Abe Coffin is downfield and Gabe Hernandez is facilitating. And I don't understand. I don't know if they just don't feel like they have the personnel to do so. To me, it just screams, put Tim Okita in that role because he's done it time
I
and time
mean,
again.
Tim Okita played in this game. He was more of a
But
he was there. He was
they've
a
made him that
facilitator.
reset or kind of secondary handler all year long, and he has one of the best completion percentages on the entire team. And
Yeah.
he plays an important role still, but then I just feel like when you're missing Paul Lally, just when you don't have an idea of who to go to Tim Okita. That just seems to be the logical solution to me there, and I don't know why they refuse to do so. Defensively, they're also missing Khalif El-Salam. That was definitely a bit of a blow for them. Probably helped their completion percentage a little bit. Definitely did not help their D-line offense because they couldn't get breaks. They could not get enough breaks down the stretch to make this game competitive. They went 3 for 7 on break opportunities, and that's where Khalif really comes into play. And that's where you miss him. Maybe you lose out on a couple of those break chances, but at least you get them, right? Like at least you have the opportunity then. And they just weren't doing it. Once again, the Growlers had 3 blocks. Like what? I don't know what happened to this team's defense. This was a team that we thought was pretty good defensively a year ago, and now they just can't seem to generate blocks at any point. I mean, they forced some more turnovers, but three blocks is, you're not going to win with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dallas really came in knowing they needed to win this game to jump ahead of Austin in the standings. I think they were really motivated to come out. I think, for Hinkie playing his last game, I think they were trying to get the fans into it. And they really showed. I mean, they won this game in the fourth quarter, right? Everything was pretty even, and then Dallas scored what? Yeah,
They
the
outscored him seven
oh
four in
they.
the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was the first two and the last 2 points of the quarter they scored. So that's a pretty good way to win if you can, come out strong at the beginning of quarter and win the end of quarter situations.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean they really turned it on. And I think it just be I mean Carson Wilder had probably his best game of the season. Ben Lewis, another great game. Like the Kaplan-Meier played solid. They have enough players here that even with some of the injuries, they put themselves in a really good position. They have 2 games left. They host San Jose on the second game of a back-to-back, and then they play against Austin to close out the season. They win those 2 games, they're in the playoffs. That's that. There's even a scenario here where they win those 2 games, and if San Diego struggles enough, they win the division. I don't see that happening, but I do think that Dallas is in a good position at this point. I'm excited to see how they finish out the regular season. Now, that being said, we've kind of given San Diego a tough time here. Give them credit because they bounced back in a big way. They went down actually against Austin in their second game of their back-to-back, 4-0 to start the game. I watched that. I was like, oh man, this is gonna be rough. I was totally ready to write San Diego off. I expected them to just kind of falter from there. They actually were trailing by 4 at halftime, too. This was an 11-7 game at halftime. They ended up winning the game by 4 points, which means they outscored Austin by 8 in the second half, which just is mind-blowing to me for a team playing without a couple of key players in the second game of back-to-back in the Texas Heat. I was really surprised and really impressed by San Diego. I did not think they were. I really kind of, my initial impression was like, man, this team is really not as good as we thought they were, and they closed fantastically.
Yeah, I mean, I think the it sort of rose up to the moment, knowing that they, to keep their lead in the division, they needed to win this game. They went on three separate runs of three or more goals, which I thought was really impressive that they were, it wasn't like they had one moment where they turned it around, but they really kept the pressure on for most of the second, third, and
The
fourth
moment where they
quarters.
turned it around really was right out of halftime. They scored five straight goals, an assist, and sorry, an assist.
A hold.
Yes, a hold, and then four straight breaks to take a lead after trailing by 4 points throughout most of the first half. I mean, that's where all of a sudden that it went from being like, oh man, is San Diego to come gonna come back to, oh okay, we have a game now. This is basically back on serve. And that's how it was for a little bit there, but they just kept it up. It wasn't just the only spurt they had in them. Kept going. I was really impressed. Lior Gvall, great game. Five assists. Not exactly a center handler role. He had 14 completions in the game, but clearly getting it done when it mattered, and
It
that was
was,
very
well,
crucial.
I think he was crucial to the downfield movement that we talked about. If Goose Helton's in the backfield, he needed someone to catch that big under, turn around, and throw the goal, right? So that opened up space for Gvall to do that. I want to give a shout out also. Dom Leggio didn't have, any goals or assists, but three blocks, 40 for 40 completions. Just a total rock for this team. I mean, he's,
He's
clearly
such a good player.
someone that, his teammates look up to. He's, not an official team captain, but kind of functions in that, older veteran role really well. So I want to make sure
God,
he gets
without a doubt.
credit there.
And funnily enough, as we were talking about, oh, can San Diego get enough blocks? They went from having three against Dallas on Friday to having 15 against Austin on Saturday. That's the type of defense that we're used to seeing, and you need to see from San Diego the rest of the way in order for them to win this. The other ridiculous stat to me, 9 for 15 on break chances. That's incredible conversion rate, which made up for the fact that they were below 50% on offense, but that's a different story. So not perfect from the Growlers by any means, but they really outplayed Austin in a game they needed to have. They outscored them 9-3 in the third quarter. Just that is wild. They really turned it on the second half.
For sure. And keep their lead in their division, right? They just need to win out, and they'll be the favorite in every other game they play.
Yeah, they certainly will. All right, now I'm gonna stay in the West here because we kind of went into the weekend figuring, all right, maybe Seattle can make some noise. They just beat Dallas. I don't know. Like, can they possibly sneak their way into the playoff conversation? I don't really know if we thought they were gonna make it there, but at least maybe like make it interesting. Nope, that didn't happen. LA goes on the road and picks up after starting the season 1-5, two road wins against Seattle and then San Jose. Very impressive performance. Getting Danny Landesman back was monstrous for this offense. He had a huge weekend across both games, but just overall was a much cleaner performance from the LA Aviators. Much better defensive performance as well because they have not been great defensively this year. I was really pretty surprised. I know you always love your LA Aviators as your hometown team, right? I get that. But I mean, did you even see this coming? Two wins and two really solid wins?
I'll be honest, I did not think they were going to win both games. I thought 1-1 was very possible, and I probably would have picked them if they were in the picks contest. So Deep Look should be glad that didn't happen. Okay, we won the West Division game this week anyway. But
We did.
Daniel Landesman, 5 assists, 5 goals, and a block, 15 of 15, 387 total yards just in the first game. And then another, we'll pull up the stats here.
I can't get
Two
over the
assists,
15
seven
of 15.
goals. Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
And
Go for
it's not like he
the
was
second
like,
game.
it's not like he was just on resets. Like he was like making
Yeah,
real
he was
throws
throwing
downfield.
downfield. If you have five assists and you have 168 throwing yards, you got to be doing something downfield.
Yeah, and I think the big change here for LA, right? They had thrown a lot of turnovers. They didn't have a great completion percentage. I think maybe even towards the bottom of the league, except for Detroit, towards the bottom of the league on their offense. So they shift Calvin Brown over to the D line, which I don't think is a move anyone expected them to make. And it turned out really, really well. I mean, you still leave San Fontaine and Colin Gall as very capable throwers in the backfield. And they have a bunch of hybrid, Sam Cook, Sean McDougal, Danny Landesman, Michael Kioi, who start downfield, are all very capable throwers of the disc. It's a very versatile O-line. And they really use that to their advantage, sort of cycling in and out of different positions as they could. And yeah, I mean, the LA, like, the defense brought it. I think Seamus Robinson is a name that folks should get to know. think we mentioned him back in like week one or two. He had a big block in one of those games against San Diego, but has I guess I'm thinking of in the second game. He had the one sequence where he like skied Sawyer Thompson for the block, dished it, ran the other like all the way down the field, skied Sawyer Thompson like on the goal line, and then tossed the assist. And I'm like, oh,
Man, we don't need to give Sawyer Thompson a tough time. He actually had a
no,
really good game this week.
I mean that in a good way. Like
I
the
know,
fact
I know.
that Shamus
Yeah, the fact
Robinson
that it
has like a
was
20
Sawyer
year
Thompson.
old can beat Sawyer Thompson twice in a row says a lot about him. But
Yeah.
don't get me wrong, Sawyer Thompson's still a revolver captain. He'll be fine.
Yeah, that's true. He'll bounce back. Speaking of bouncing back, I was surprised, despite the fact that they did not obviously play super well, their best player in this game for Seattle, unquestionably Manny Eckert. Mark Burton was back and it didn't really matter. He went 63 of 64 throwing, 5 assists and a goal. I was just really impressed overall with how well Eckert played. I think this speaks volumes about his ability to really run this offense and facilitate going forward. Mark Burton played well, but I was surprised he had 3 goals and an assist in this game, which just doesn't really feel like Burton's game, right? Burton, we're used to seeing him put up 10 assists in a game and like no turns because that's just how he's been in the AUDL. I think this is a little bit of a changing of the guard. We saw Eckert play really well against Dallas week before, but that was without Burton on the field. So for Burton to be back and for Eckert to still have this type of usage and the effective usage that he had was really impressive to me. 613 yards of total offense as well. I mean, Seattle, if they could ever just piece together, I know it's such a weird thing, is the city just they don't have their top men's players for the most part playing in the AUDL. You know, if they had sockeye roster, they'd be great, right? Probably one of the best teams in the league.
I mean, even with this roster, consistently, it would be great.
Yeah,
I think
they would be
that's the
much
big thing
better than
is,
they are, I think.
one week
They would be at
Seattle,
least in the playoff conversation a little bit, something more
right?
solidly than they
One
were.
week they go and beat Dallas, and then they go and lose to LA. One week they're crushing San Jose by six, and the next week they're giving up a 6-goal lead.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I think that's part of it is the fact that on the whole, despite the fact that you do have some veterans like Mark Burton and like about to say Alex Duffel, but I don't even think he plays anymore. Brad Hauser's
No,
still there. But
Alex
so the
Simon, Adam Simon. So you're
Adam
thinking of.
Simon, there we go. Chicken. So they've got a couple players that are obviously been around the block and understand how this game works more than anybody else, but the majority of the team is very young. You know that Manny Eckert's a recent college graduate, and Jack Brown is I'm pretty sure maybe 19. Shane Worthington can't be older than 21, I don't think. I've lost track a little bit because of the pandemic, but a lot of their key players are very young players, and so I think given time to grow into it, we might see a couple more guys step up and just start to see that. But it's just credit to LA. They played a really good game twice. You already started to talk about 2 assists and 7 goals. I mean, what was Landeman's? What did Landeman do on the course of the weekend? That was just like ridiculous numbers for two games.
Yeah, do you want to know? There, it's 12 goals, 7 assists, 2 blocks, and 2 total throwaways.
On like 39 of I guess 41 throws. So I mean, to me, that's just. To come out, he hasn't played in a long time too. He's been out for much of the season, and you can see how just critical of a piece he is to this LA offense. Without him, they certainly were much worse off. And I it makes LA very dangerous the rest of the way if Landeskog is going to continue to play and they keep Calvin Brown on defense because Brown is a great player. There's no question about that. He's uber talented. The problem is the turnovers. I've had conversations in other circles with Jonathan Nethercutt, as fantastic of a player as he is, just like the number of turnovers makes you wonder a little bit about keeping him on an offensive line. It's kind of the same thing with Calvin Brown, where he's a fantastic throwing talent, and you need somebody to take those shots downfield, but you feel better about that if it's on your defensive unit, because that way the turnovers don't hurt you quite as much, if that makes sense.
And what a weapon for the D line, right? You get a turn. You got Shamus Robinson and KJ Koo and Matt Miller. These names aren't maybe particularly known outside of LA, but if they're streaking deep and Calvin Brown's throwing it to them, I like those chances.
Yeah, I mean, you get a flamethrower all of a sudden on defense. And I don't mean that to reference the old San Francisco flamethrower. I mean just his throwing ability. I mean, he now all of a sudden can open up so much. And it makes your D-line offense much more potent, right? It makes your, it increases your break chances, I think, overall. If you're already going to end up going, I don't know, 1 for 3 on average, or slightly better than that, maybe like 35, 37% on break chances. It might as well, have some of those turnovers be the high volume deep shots to really keep the offensive D line guessing. Because that, I mean, as you've talked about, O line players, you like to say they're not very athletic. So,
They are very athletic. They just don't like playing defense.
that is accurate. That is for sure. All right, moving on from LA. We're gonna actually go up to Canada. And I can't believe I'm saying this. The Ottawa Outlaws are 2-0. I genuinely do not even know where to begin here because they won their first ever game against Toronto. And then as the only team playing back to back this weekend, because there's only three teams in the Canada Cup, they then went and stomped Montreal. What on earth just happened?
Yeah, I'll tell you where to begin. Nick Boucher is pissed that they're only playing 8 games and that his stats won't line up with the rest of the leagues. So he's just off to a hot start. 11 assists and 2 goals, 62 of 64 throwing, 888 throwing yards. The receiving or the total yards aren't even on the ADL stat sheet because they don't
Oh, I've
fit in
got
the
it.
3-digit column.
Ready for this? 1,223 for the game.
That's ridiculous.
Just video. When we say video game like numbers, this is a new definition of video game like numbers in the AUDL. And now, I do not in any way mean to take away from the performance we just saw. Did anybody actually want to play defense in this game? Because it looked like no. It looked like, and I mean that on both sides. Final score against Toronto was 27-24. I mean, that's just ridiculously high scoring. And like I know we're talking about, oh, Boucher, he did. He put up fantastic numbers. He wasn't the only player to post a plus 12 in the game. Mike McKenzie had 5 assists, 6 goals, and a block. I mean, this was just like nobody on defense seemed to care all that much. And I'm so happy for Ottawa. This is a long time coming. Alec Arsenal, great game. Jeremy Hill, who we've had on the show previously, had
He
three
predicted
assists and
this.
5 goals. He
He
did. He said Ottawa was gonna win the Canada Cup this year. I did not believe him. I still don't know that I believe him, but I feel a lot more confident now. That is for sure. I am really surprised and really impressed with how Ottawa played this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I am curious, like, you hinted at the lack of defense. I don't know if that's just lack of competitive playing. I know Canada was a little slower to reopen than the United States, and that, now that we're seeing teams in midseason form, like the Atlanta Hustle zone maybe doesn't look this good, back in June, right? These players,
Right.
it's early June for them.
I understand that. I also just wonder a little bit of like, does Toronto care? Like this game doesn't really count in the AUDL. They can't make championship weekend. I can guarantee you a lot of those players are focused on their upcoming club championships in October. They're probably
Sure,
just
and
treating this as a warm up. And
possible they're missing some players. No Isaiah Mazzucchelli.
Yeah, definitely weren't with
No
their top roster. But
Thompson
even
McKnight.
still, in most years, without their top squad, they've been able to handle Ottawa with ease. So a 3-point loss to the Outlaws in Toronto is shocking to me. I think, just give the credit where it's due, because Ottawa, whether you want to say Toronto didn't play their best game, they're missing players, whatever, Ottawa played great. This is easily the best game we've ever seen from Ottawa in the AUDL, at least that I can remember.
I'll be honest,
Maybe.
this is the only like start to finish Ottawa game I've ever watched.
It's fair, right? I mean, they usually are an afterthought. They're usually getting blown out. Maybe they're grinding out a win over the Philadelphia Phoenix north of the border that nobody's paying any attention to because it's Ottawa and Philadelphia, and they are combining for 4 wins in the season or something like that in most years. So, yeah, I mean, this was rare exception to what has been the rule of the Ottawa Outlaws not being a factor in the AUDL. And then they turned around and did it again against Montreal.
Hey, credit to the
Who?
Montreal defense. They held Nick Boucher only to 2 assists and 4 goals and 568 yards. This is less than half of the yards he had against Toronto.
That's great. They went 0 for 10 on break chances.
I didn't even notice that when I scrolled down the stats.
What?
Wow.
How
That's
do you do
terrible.
that? And that's where it comes down to once again. Final score of this one, 26-19. Did anybody play defense? Like, did anybody actually care? Kevin Quinlan played great on offense.
They played plenty of, well, Montreal had 8 blocks and they forced 20 turnovers. It's not nothing.
I guess. I mean, I guess they. I don't know, but like, how do you go 0 for 10 on break chances, first of all,
That's even
with the
Detroit
other
doesn't do
team?
that.
Yeah, I just. Yeah, Detroit usually at least has one punched in, or they go like 0 for 4. They only get 4 break chances, but I mean, Montreal was a solid team. They were like a playoff, fringes team in 2019. They, had some really good players, and they lost a lot because a lot of those like kind of French imports that they had had over the previous couple of years, like Sacha Kwasniewski and like, a few others. No, Potsukoli's back. Never mind. I don't know what I'm talking about here. Never mind. Their French players are back here. I'm not entirely sure what went wrong for
Not
Montreal
all of
then.
them. Not all of them are back.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Either way, this was just getting beat by Ottawa by 7 in the second game of Ottawa playing a back-to-back, and you're at home? Wow. I'm incredibly disappointed in what I saw from Montreal Royale. Like I said, Kevin Quinlan played well. It's great. Kind of a consolation prize for them because they ended up getting blown out. I don't know. I definitely bit of a head scratcher there.
Yeah, and I'm curious, these teams play each other, what, 4 times each, I think?
Some yeah,
So
it's got to be if
we'll.
they're all playing 8 games.
It'll be interesting to see what the rematch looks like, if there's any adjustments teams make, or if they're just, gonna trot out, vanilla strategies and play this like a inter-squad scrimmage, or inter-country scrimmage.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like maybe they're just trying not to tip things. I don't know. I am genuinely of the opinion that Toronto for sure does not care about this Canada Cup. And I know that there's like a monetary prize. I get that. But like, you're not playing for AUDL Championship weekend. You can't win any AUDL Championship this year. They've got, the whole schedule has been thrown out of whack. You're starting late. You're playing only these two teams. It's
You'd
just
think they'd
hard to
be
find the
like
same
happy to
level of
play though.
motivation.
Like I don't know
Yeah,
how
but that
much you've
they've.
followed the Canadian like return to play stuff. They've been so much like do you remember back in June how like the energy for playing Ultimate was just so
Yeah, oh
high?
yeah.
Like club trials were starting, AUDL was back. It was, just such a like I didn't expect to like Ultimate that much, to be honest.
Sure, that's
I'd
fair.
hope some of these players are experiencing that too.
Right. I'm sure they are. Knocking off, everybody's knocking off the rust a little bit too. The other piece of it too that we're not talking about here before we move on to the rest of our games is, Ottawa was always a fairly young team that was kind of coming into their own. Well, now we haven't seen them be playing in 2 years, so they've kind of taken the next step up. Toronto, meanwhile, is usually pretty old. They no longer have Breton Tan, who is one of their best young players. No longer have Akinfenwa Moroka, who was one of their great young players from 2019. And you're talking about a team that is a lot of veterans, right? Isaiah Mazzucchelli's been around for a long time. Thompson McKnight, Andrew Carroll. I mean, these guys aren't really young anymore. So to take 2 years off, it might take them a little longer to get back up to speed than some of the young guns who have been just lifting all throughout the pandemic, which I wish I had done because I did not do that. Anyway, talking about guys that definitely lifted throughout the pandemic, Orion Cable, if you haven't seen it already, just absolutely blowing away the AUDL's, or I should say, I think it's the Greatest Bags
Yeah.
Vertical Challenge. I mean, just
So, for those who have no
11.
idea what we're talking
Yeah.
about, it's like a device, like the NFL Combine when you like, have to jump up and like swat as high as you can to see
Well,
what
I
your vertical
do,
is.
but.
I'm saying to a hypothetical listener, if you
Oh,
don't know, just
okay.
like Google like combine vertical jump, something like that. It'll come
Right.
up. But
Or
this
just
is
go to our Twitter
a
account. We retweeted this like
oh
yesterday.
sure, that's a better way to do it. Getting engagement, love it.
Yeah.
But it's a basically a vertical pole with a magnet on the top that's adjustable, and you put a disc attached to it, and you see how high you can like yank the disc off of the pole. And Orion Cable, barefooted, after playing a full AUDL game,
Yep.
set the record for the season.
11 feet 8 inches, and he ripped that thing down. It was wild. I mean, he's just unbelievably athletic, and he's gonna be such a phenom in the future. He's, I mean, gonna be going
Almost
into
right
his
now.
first. Yeah, I mean, he absolutely could be considered that now. He's heading into his first year of college action, or at least, college age action. We haven't seen him play before at the college division level because of the pandemic. So, he may not have put up some of the gaudiest stats of all time, but he definitely was the headliner, I think, from that perspective. Now, if you want to talk about putting up gaudy stats, that department belongs to Tanner Halkyard, who had 6 goals, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. And for the love of God, get him in the All-Star game, people. Stop voting for just Ben Sadok. This guy is an All-Star. And they Boston burying the lead here, totally. Boston won. That wasn't super surprising. Credit to Tampa Bay. They actually kept this pretty close.
Put up a good
26-23.
fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out Bobby Ley. Bobby Ley, who we've been giving a tough time to pretty much all year, had probably his best game of the year. 10 assists, 3 turnovers, 45 of 48 throwing, 926 yards of offense. I mean, that's fantastic. It is really unbelievable. And shout out to Ley because I think that's a huge performance. Also, I want to make sure, I'm pretty sure I have this right, but Topher Davis, we've only seen him in a couple games this year. Man's a scoring machine. He had 4 assists, 4 goals, and a block, +8 rating in the game. Pretty sure his first game of the year, he had 5 goals. So you're talking about like 4.5 goals a game across 2 games. Pretty good. Pretty good. It seems like Boston is finding out that they actually have a little more depth than they initially thought, but it's just a little bit, little. It's not enough, and it's a little too late at this point. They're not gonna make the playoffs, but building for next year for sure. Boston's got a pretty bright future. A lot of young players will be back next year. I think also having a full offseason gel will do them good.
I mean, they're not technically out of the playoffs yet. They still
They're
have to
not
play
technically.
New York. If they can pull off an upset in that game, they're half a game back of the Empire in the standings. Can't count them
Right
out
now
yet.
they're 3-4. You can't count them out yet. I don't feel super optimistic about their chances, to be
Oh,
honest with you.
I would not pick them, but
Yeah, you're right. They're
if you're in
still are
that
in it. They're
Boston
still in
locker
it.
room, all is not lost.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It just makes you wonder, like some of the things where it's like, had they just beaten Philadelphia and they were 4-3, this would be a totally different outlook right now. Or had they been able to hold on against Atlanta? I mean, there's just so many of the what ifs this year for Boston for sure. But I think that comes with being in the expansion franchise and kind of getting settled in. All right, let's wrap this up by talking about easily the worst game of Ultimate anybody could have possibly watched all weekend. And that was the Indianapolis Alley Cats playing against the Detroit Mechanics. And this was just ugly. Just really ugly. Each team had at least 28 turnovers, which is just really bad. Detroit was 1 for 4 on huck attempts. They went, we're talking about how bad Montreal was. Credit to the Detroit Mechanics. They went 2 for 13 on break chances. So, huge step up from Montreal. Now, here's probably the most disappointing stat of all of the stats that I've just read about Detroit. They went 3 for 9 on red zone possessions. How do you do that?
How do you do
I
that
like,
and you want to break your winning streak?
right. Well, losing streak. You want to finally
Oh,
win a
sorry,
game.
losing streak. Sorry. Wow.
Yeah, come on.
I just
Detroit hasn't had a winning streak since 2016. I don't know, actually, that might even be accurate.
here's my favorite stat. I've been slowly keeping track of like lowest scores per quarter per half. I'm curious. There's that one there
Sure.
we've seen teams get shut out in a quarter of the season.
That did happen. That's right.
The lowest that a team has scored in a half was four. And Detroit didn't match at this game, but over the second and third quarters, they scored a
Yes.
combined 3 goals.
That is true. They did do
That
that.
is pitiful.
Not what you're looking for, let
There
me
are
tell
some
you.
teams that score 3 goals in 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Austin Soul did. They scored the first 4 goals of the game in the first couple minutes of the game. I mean, yeah, it happens pretty quick. Most teams can get up to 3 goals, no problem. It doesn't usually take them that long. Unless you're playing Atlanta, sometimes it takes a
And
little bit.
this wasn't the Alley Cat's strongest roster, right? No
No,
Travis
Travis Carpenter wasn't
Carpenter,
there, which is a huge loss.
no Rick Gross, also no Levi Jacobs. Like, that's their three best offensive players right there.
Yeah, and they still somehow won this game by 5 points.
It's not somehow. Detroit's
Although,
that bad. Like,
hang on. I don't know if you've heard the saying before. Good teams win games. Great teams cover. And the Detroit Mechanics covered on the AUD on the
on
DraftKings line
DraftKings.
for this week.
Good for them.
It was Indy favored -5.5. So they just got in there with the cover, the backdoor cover here. And that's
Great
about
line.
the only positive silver lining I could ever possibly find for a Detroit Mechanics team. Playing against Indy, who is by far the second worst team in the division, without its three best offensive players, arguably four. I know Cam Brock was here. Okay, Cam Brock played. All right, so three of its best offensive players, and they still lost by five. You scored 13 points. I just.
Ottawa
Just.
scored 13 points in half.
Yeah, just. Well, that's it. Detroit
We
Mechanics,
should,
you guys
if
suck.
hey, what if we put Detroit in Canada where they don't play defense? Maybe they'll sneak out an
Score
upset win.
16 and give up 37. Honestly, Detroit might have given up like 35 points playing against the way Ottawa was clicking on Saturday.
That's
Or on,
possible.
yeah, Saturday.
All right, well, we'll
Yeah,
have to
I
wait
mean,
till 2022 for interleague play.
yeah, if the league somehow schedules Ottawa versus Detroit as one of the out of division games, I think we have grounds for a malpractice lawsuit. I'm not positive, but that feels like that's got to at least be on the road to getting there. All right, with that, we're going to now wrap this up and get into our coach's corner for this week. So make sure you stick around because Brian Jones is coming up in just a sec. Going to break down Atlanta against New York, biggest game of the weekend by far. A couple other talking points as well, like can Dallas make championship weekend despite the injuries? A couple of great questions we got to get to from our listeners. So make sure you stick around. That'll be coming up in just a second.
The AUDL has gone green with VII Apparel. Every time you purchase a full sub jersey, which is made from VII Apparel's proprietary green line recycled material, they will plant a tree. Double up your environmental impact by joining VII Apparel and the AUDL in lowering our sport's carbon footprint. Sustainability is the ultimate goal here, folks. Head over to viiapparel.co to order your AUDL fan gear today. VII Apparel, the official jersey provider of the AUDL.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Stall 7. We are joined now by Brian Jones for our weekly Coach's Corner. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. Ton to talk about this week.
Yeah, I mean, every single weekend in the AUDL now has like these like great slate of games and these great implications for the playoffs. It just keeps getting better and better.
I don't understand it, but I guess I can't complain. It gives us something to talk about every week and lots of fun stuff to watch every single week in the AUDL. So we're going to start here, and the majority of this is definitely going to be focused on what was the biggest game of the weekend, Atlanta beating New York. And just give me your initial thoughts on this game because there's so much to go into here between the zone, how New York fared against it, Antoine Davis. I mean, just start talking to me about how you felt about this game.
Yeah, I mean, I was really looking forward to this game, and it didn't disappoint. I think the biggest thing that I was looking forward to was just contrasting to see how New York would do with the zone, especially compared to how DC did. You know, we saw DC play in Atlanta a few weeks ago, do well enough, have a good defensive pressure on Atlanta, be able to win the game, and then Atlanta going against DC, their zone adjusts, they take away what DC does well, and now DC finds themselves behind the eight ball. And so it was always going to be a question of like, how well does New York handle this? And I thought there were some like good things they did. And it was really interesting to watch was the way that Jack Williams and Elliot Chartok kind of navigated the zone together. A lot of it was like a two-person game through a lot of the game where, you know, Jack would push it back to Elliot and Elliot would immediately throw it back to Jack. And the reason why I like this is that if you contrast the style with DC, I really felt like when DC played Atlanta, with Rowan, Zach Norbaum, Gus Norbaum, and Malks, they did a lot of fast movement, but it wasn't always with intention. And there's kind of this art versus science of how do you run zone offense. And because a lot of times zone gets kind of like relegated to being a lot of this like weak defensive strategy in a lot of people's minds, you don't sit there and at the highest level go over the fundamentals of what makes a good zone O player. And I think with Jack Williams, he does a really good job of faking at the defense. DC felt like they weren't faking at the defense, but more of like faking to an offensive player. And I just think that there's this real art of kind of the quarterback in the NFL, you know, they move the safety with their eyes. And it's the same sort of thing where like a pump fake directly at a defender tells you so much information. So when you watch Jack Williams, watch Elliott Chartok, you can really see them look at the defense and pump fake directly at the defense to make them move. Another player that does this really well is Boston's Ben Sadoc, is they get the zone to move and flex on them. And so DC would progress through their options and they would catch it and immediately swing it. Atlanta could lock in on DC's eyes and their rhythm and say, you're going to catch it and swing it. We're going to start moving right away. Whereas Elliott Chartok and Jack Williams would look at the defense would collapse on them and then they would swing it. And so now the defense is moving the other way compared to the disc and they get that advantage off of it. And that's one of those subtle things that it's really hard to teach and explain. And it's just something that some people have naturally, which is their ability to move the defense with their eyes, move the defense with their pump fakes in a way and like orchestrate and know, okay, I'm going to move it here. You're going to collapse and I'm going to go the other way with it and kind of countering in a way. And that was really fun to watch. The struggling thing was like, go ahead.
I was going to just say the style contrast between them and DC was very apparent. It really felt like DC kind of played, like you said, the small ball, very tight spaces. New York felt really comfortable spacing it out. And they were able to just spread it all over the field. And I think that really benefited them in the end because it just put Atlanta in a position on an AUDL field where there's just too much space to try and take up.
Right. And they also have the throwers and they're pretty confident that they can like hit these hammers and over the tops in a way that's different. The problem with New York, I think, and their challenge was that they were almost too spaced out at times. Mm-hmm. And that really, there was a moment where there was a stall out in the third quarter because Elliott and Jack Williams got stranded together and Atlanta was able to overload that area. And there just wasn't the poppers in the second level. When you're looking at the three levels of field, we're talking about handler level, popper level, right past that, and the third layer of deeps. And New York was spread out well in the handler level, spread out well in the deep level, but that middle of the field, there wasn't too many offensive players just kind of standing there and occupying defense. And it goes back to this adage of, if you're a zone offensive player, you want to be either guarded by zero or two players. And it's kind of, it's just such a, again, going back to art versus science, it's like, how do you teach people how to properly pop? It's very experiential, and some people just don't get it or they don't. And I think New York could have made their life a little bit easier by not being so spread out, and that's one of the challenges on this wide field for sure.
So despite the success of Atlanta's zone, you know, New York does make a comeback at the end of the game. They were up at halftime. Atlanta comes back in the third quarter, and New York, you know, desperately, it was probably some of the most fun ultimate I've ever watched, to be honest, that Empire, like, offense going through the zone when they knew they needed to score, you know, quicker than they had in the first half. What were the keys to New York's comeback?
I think in that moment, you're really looking at something that in some ways can be considered a gimmick, but it's been not really that. Like, I remember in the early ADL days, we talked about double teams and like people were going, hey, is this a gimmick? How can we use this? And then we've seen teams like San Diego use roller poles and we've also seen super dumps to combat them. And so New York did a really good job of using their athletic advantage and their height with Yacht, Marquez, Jeff Babbitt at the end of this game. And that really got them back into the situation, which was they could use an onside pull, put the disc to the sideline and double team and be able to get, in some cases, a block on the hammer with just the tall athletes they have, but also force a dangerous throw. I think too many teams, when they look at the double teams, there's kind of like this way you can use double teams that is going to be helpful to stop flow and just make the team go backwards. And there's many uses of the double teams like we saw New York utilize, which are to completely trap and force a really hard, dangerous throw. I think when teams use double teams, they often are either they're trying to force the hammer, but they leave an open reset option. And so they're not aggressive enough. And as a result, you kind of have to live or die in that moment saying, you're at the end of the game, if you're New York, we're just going to make you throw up something high and we're going to use our athletes in order to get it. So they did a great job of taking away all reset options available right around the disc. And that's something that's I think is pretty key. The other thing that makes really good double teams in general, though, is that the marks know exactly what they're taking away. There's this thing about defense. When you try to guard everything, you really guard nothing. And I see that in a lot of bad double teams where the marks are just too active in what they're taking away. And in this instance, you could kind of see the New York double team, they don't really bite on sideline throws. They know that everybody else is doing their job around the close throws. We're going to stay anchored to the middle of the field because that's where the hammer's going to throw, and that's how they get one of those crucial turnovers. I also think, kind of going back to how Atlanta built this lead, what was really interesting is that the performance by Antoine Davis really should be shouted out. To have zero turnovers and to have the impact that he did in the game, that's Atlanta showing growth and Antoine Davis showing growth. Being in the right spot, performing at his best, and doing what his role is prescribed to be, not having to do too much, and just kind of getting the under, dishing it, going deep, repeating, being athletic, having that like gravity well that pulls in the rest of the defense and allows other people to make plays. That was something special to see. And the other thing that was fun, kind of getting to where we got, which was John Stubbs playing defense, which I think was
couldn't believe that they did that.
You would think this guy is posting statistics that shows you that he's one of the best offensive players in the game. And we know he's a world-class player. We've seen it year after year. And it's a really intriguing message to see what Atlanta's doing, because John Stubbs, we know, is only playing home games. And it looks like Miranda Rothnels is valuing the chemistry of a certain unit on offense rather than just saying we're going to put our seven best players out there. And so it's like, what are the implications of this? Was this an experiment? You know, we know John Stubbs can play really great D. We also know he can be a really calming presence on the offense. You need to have that off those offensive reps to work through the kinks. Atlanta's been consistently growing. This was one of their best offensive performances to date. Like, the story this season about Atlanta has been mostly their defense. Moving John Stubbs to D shows you that they have something else in the works where they can continue to grow. And so they can continue to get better and better. But that Atlanta got that lead in the third. New York came back with the double teams, forced some turnovers, and had a chance to tie it up in the end. And that's how we got to the end of the game.
Right. I think the Stubbs thing is so interesting, too, because you're already down without Parker Bray. You'd think that would be even more reason to put John over. We've seen him be a great defender, no question about it. He played on Revolver's D-line when they were world champions back in 2018. So there's no question he can do it.
No. Definitely 2017. You got BJ over here who won a championship in 2018.
Oh, no, 2018 world champions. It's not 2018. Oh, come on, 2018 national champions.
Come on. I was there watching the game live. I know what happened. Give me a break. Anyway, so the point is that, yeah, I know that, yes, you know, BJ did shut him down. You know, they took care of Revolver on their way to a championship at the national level in 2018. No question about that. But we've seen him be great there. But you already referenced here New York making the comeback, making it close to the end of the game, big part of it being the double teams. And double team situation gets you a block to Jeff Babbitt. This is a question we probably would have already asked regardless, but one of your former players, Pippen, and Matt Auletta, getting at us on Twitter to want to know, would you have called the immediate timeout that New York did there as soon as Babbitt got the block? Would you have let Ben Yacht, who was already on the field, and maybe try and get a little bit of a fast break going? It seemed like New York might have had numbers.
Yeah, my initial reaction was to not call the timeout. And I remember watching some games in the past where you can see that the defense in that moment is not set. And it's a tough call to make because you have the same situation happen a few minutes before where New York does the onside pull, they get the block, and then two throws later they turn it over, where they could have called the timeout and get their offense on the field. Right. And so here, though, Atlanta has that zone. I think the right call is to not call the timeout for initially and let New York gain some yards, get it to half field, because Atlanta's going to throw on. If you call timeout, Atlanta's putting their zone on, and they've had good experience of working that clock and getting it down. And in this case, you allow Miranda Rothnoles to have a chance to have a game plan to work against Jeff Babbitt at the end of that game. Because what's happening off screen, and that we don't know until you kind of talk to the players around the game, is that it looked like for sure that somebody was just guarding Jeff Babbitt because he couldn't come on screen. And it turns out it was likely two people were actually paying attention to Jeff Babbitt at the end of that clock, which is
just
smart, because we've seen how effective Jeff can be in those end of quarter situations. Mm-hmm. And so that really leaves it up to going, like, you force New York to beat you in a different way. And so, yeah, I think I would have hoped in that moment, you never really know when you're in that situation as a coach, I would have let it ride for at least a few more seconds until flow stopped. And then that's, I would have fair, put my offense.
I can understand, though. I can understand why New York did it, though. Earlier in the game, they had that kind of interesting, but they almost like an onside pull. They pulled into their own end zone on the corner line. They get the turnover, And then in the haste of MKBHD trying to move it upfield to one of, I want to say it was Mike Drost. Drost turns and he starts to move away from it. MKBH throws it and Matt Smith gets a layout D and they turn it back over. Now that, you know, that is fine because they ended up getting the disc back, ultimately getting the break. But when you only have so much time on the clock, I get it. It's a tough thing though, because as you mentioned, you let Atlanta get set. We've seen this fantastic defense when you can put that zone out there. And you saw New York got through it, but then got into the red zone and everything slowed down. I mean, credit in the end, Kelvin Williams had to just go up and make a sensational play on defense against John Lithgow to seal the game from Atlanta. There's no question about it. Alex, you talked about it already. One of the best games of Ultimate we've seen, maybe all year long. It seriously was just a ton of fun. Two very highly matched teams. I don't know if you guys were listening to the broadcast. They kept talking about all of the 2017, like, All-Americans from college in this game. And it was wild. And we finally get a chance to see Jack Williams match up with John Stubbs, match up we've been waiting for since the 2017 Callahan was handed out. Everybody felt like Jack Williams got a little bit snubbed there after his otherworldly performance for UNC Wilmington at Nationals. So there's so many storylines baked into it.
Stubbs had the same performance the year before.
That's very true. That's very true. But if you're going year by year, there's some debate. We won't need to get into all of that. But the point is, you know, there's extra storylines baked in. Yes, 100%. Right. There's definitely, it's been 4 years and there's still some beef baked in there, no question about it. But I think the question now, and this comes straight from Benjamin Ashton on Twitter, is can New York repeat? We've seen them lose twice already this year. And now you start to have to wonder a little bit. He did ask, too, who the biggest threat is to New York repeating. I think the answer there is pretty clear. The biggest threat is the Atlantic Division. I don't know that the Atlantic Division, to me, seems to be better than any other division in the league at this point. Maybe Chicago could piece it all together. I'm not super convinced the West Division could send anybody at this point, based on what we've seen from Dallas and San Diego, to really take down the Empire or anybody from the Atlantic Division at this point. So, BJ, you know, what's the key here to New York being able to right the ship? They're still 4-2, but getting back to really being championship contender level of play that we've seen from them in the past.
Yeah, I think you're going to like push the groan button here in a minute if we had like we're a live radio show. But the answer of like who what's preventing New York from repeating, it's all within. It's all themselves. That's the biggest opponent right now.
There's, I'll just do the there we go. Groan.
No, yeah, I think groan for, no, for I, us I, here. I think the thing is, though, is that within the East, every single one of these teams presents a different type of matchup. DC moves it fast. They do a really good job. Atlanta has a really good defense to match up athletically or with their zone. And Raleigh has just this unique offense that can – we haven't – like, we talked about Raleigh being, you know, down and out when they were 0-2, and they're right where we thought they would be, back in the hunt, controlling their own destiny. They win out here, and they win by more than one. They get – if they beat Raleigh by more than one and Atlanta by more than run, or sorry, if Raleigh beats DC by more than one and Atlanta by more than one, I believe they're in the front runner spot to go ahead and take the first place in this division, which is still kind of nuts that we have four teams in the East that have that capability. And so from a team perspective, anybody in the East is going to be a challenge for New York. Chicago is going to be the team coming out of the Central if they do come out. Assuming that, you know, they've looked good and rebounded from a couple of their losses, that it's going to be able to challenge New York. Dallas as well has the athletes. It's one of those things where like Dallas is this like broken down car that if they get to the championship weekend, they can be deadly, but we're just not sure if they're going to make it to their destination yet. And so we'll talk more about their chances later. I think for New York, the biggest thing holding them back right now is that they still have to figure out things in offense. Elliot Chartok had four turnovers against Atlanta. That's not where he can be in order for New York, I think, to win. I think he's got to have a couple of turnovers maximum, and they've got to find ways to make that offense work where it can kind of hold consistently and not give up that lead, because the other problem this team faces is their defensive depth. Their second line defenders, you know, some of them can bring some great pressures in specific moments, but right now the defense just isn't there. As a result, you could give up, like you have no margin on offense. You give up that lead in the third quarter. If you had gotten some of those breaks back, been able to put some away, you would be talking about a very different situation than rather than rapid double teams. And New York may be in the driver's seat there at the end of the game instead of actually having to come back. And so I think it's offensive efficiency's got to be better. They've got to be able to find ways to get creative and get turnovers with their second unit. And if they can grow in those capacities, they can still very much repeat and win the championship.
Yes, well, you know, I think it'll be interesting how the seeding plays out in that Atlantic playoff matchups. But you hinted at this earlier. Their, 2019 championship opponent, Dallas Roughnecks, are still fighting just to make it out of the West. You know, imagine if Dallas was still in the Atlantic. That would be totally wild. But given the injuries that we've seen from them, this question comes from our own Charlie Eisenhood in the Discord. Can Dallas still pull out a championship weekend appearance despite their injuries after their win over San Diego?
I think that win over San Diego is one of those like do or die moments that could have saved their season. It's hard to know how everybody's feeling in a given team. You go through these moments, and like we talked about before, Dallas is this imperfect and complete team right now where pieces are going in and out. Kyle Hanke's going to be gone for the season, unfortunately, with surgery. And it feels like on paper, once they get everybody together, that it can work. And I think that that win over San Diego shows you that they can beat anybody in this division. So if they do make it to the playoffs, they can make the adjustments they need to. They can win an away game against San Diego. Probably going to be tight, but they can definitely do it. And then you have to like all of the role players they have. You have to like Abe Coffin. You have to like Jay Froude and their talent level. And so it's a question of like, can they use this adversity to grow? And that's like something where it's very much an internal mindset, because some teams do face adversity and you start to fray across the edges. Teammates start like blaming each other and getting mad at each other. It doesn't seem like that's happening just because Dallas was able to recover and say, you know what, we're going to continue to fight through this. We're going to make adjustments. Yeah, we had a game against Seattle where we played poorly. They recovered, beat San Jose. And to beat your division rival, who's at the head of the division, when San Diego's got a lot of reasons to put their foot on the gas and stomp in that instance. And to not be able to do that is not fun, not pleasant to be a part of. So if you're San Diego. So I like Dallas's chances to make it back to championship weekend right now.
I have to say I agree with you. I think this was kind of what we expected. I know maybe not the exact route that we did. We figured there was going to be a couple slip-ups here or there for Dallas during the regular season. Alex and I both in the preseason picked San Diego to win the division and then Dallas to make it a championship weekend. Now, I think the issue here is, like, can they get healthy in time? But they have enough depth that I think it really doesn't even matter if they can really put the pieces together. Gabe Hernandez, to me, has been one of the biggest kind of, I think, game changers for them now with the move that they made to put him on offense. And I also really love the idea of having Jay Froude play defense. I mean, how difficult is it, though, to make these like major kind of personnel switches when you're this far into the season?
Yeah, it can be really tough. It's really interesting sometimes because it can be magic if you have a good structure and somebody can come into it and play that role perfectly. I think what you're seeing with Gabe Hernandez is he's somebody who just thrives when he's getting every other. And he can hit these nice long swings, throws to space, and he thrives when he's getting the disc a lot because he's really hard to pin down in the backfield. He's got a lot of elite handler moves where it's like Gabe, I think, has gotten by not being necessarily like the top 1% of athletes. He's made some spectacular plays, but ever since that ACL tear, he has been so savvy and so smart. He understands leverage in an offensive way where it's like if the defense is playing slightly out of position, he's going to get the disc. And then after that, he's an A-plus thrower, and that's just going to take some pressure off of Abe Coffin and just move the disc around and get it into more dangerous spots. It allows you to connect handlers to cutters, takes pressure off of other people. It's one of those things that feels like you can't always put your finger on it, but when you get a guy in there, all of a sudden things just start working. It builds up the confidence of everybody else, and it just helps your offense function in a way that's really novel. Like you said, the role players, Jay Froude to defense, Ben Lewis, everybody else around, Thomas Slack, they've got the role players. They've got the depth. It's the question of getting everybody to work together. And this is a good sign that people are starting to come together. Like beating that San Diego team is great. And you got to think that, you know, we had Connor Klein come on late in the season for the Empire in 2019 and scored a bunch of goals and gave us something that we didn't know we needed at the time. That was something that became kind of seamless. It was just that by the nature of that role, that guy coming in, it can sometimes be really easy. It can be hard when you don't have that kind of person on the bench or a person on the defense with superpowers. You know, Connor Klein has some of the one of the quickest first steps I've ever seen, and Gabe Hernandez is this A-plus thrower. Of course, when you're going to get something that's different, a different flavor than you had before, that's really good to have that depth to be able to call on it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like Dallas is on the right path right now, and it'd be really interesting. Two more games for them, and a lot to play for still. The whole West Division kind of feels like it's up in the air. Really, every division still up in the air, which is exciting to say after 8 weeks of AUDL action. Brian, we could sit here and talk with you all day. I would love to be able to talk about personnel decisions from New York, Atlanta, until, you know, we probably got into a 3-hour podcast, but we'll save the listeners from that. We have plenty more to talk about next week, too. Some great questions this week from our listeners, so thank you so much for everyone who submitted stuff. And if it wasn't read today, we'll try to get to it next week. But Brian, as always, thanks so much for joining us, and we will hear from you again soon.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Alex. Always fun.
Again to Stall 7. As always, thanks to Brian Jones for coming on the show. Just every week, I feel like I'm getting taken to school. And I mean that in a good way. Just learning constantly. Just so much insight from him. Also some fun conversations there. Because I think I have a bit more faith than maybe the general average national fan does in the Dallas Roughnecks at this point. I think they could still pull this out. But anyway, we're going to get into our picks contest now. And we made a big stride this past week, Alex. We closed the gap on Deep Book. We are now just one pick behind them.
Okay,
and
we had a solid week,
right? Went 2-2.
Forget closing the gap. They went 0-4.
Yeah, that's really
so
more
bad.
We gained our ground. Yeah, that's pretty awful. It's hard to go 0-4. So we had a good time with this. We picked our three games for this week. And now, for the first time ever, the Lions are from DraftKings. We are not setting our own lines this week. I know the Lions came out last week for, you know, last week's game, but it was after we made our picks already, so we just stuck with what we already had set up. So our first game here is in the Central Division, and this is going to be a tough one, Alex, because we have the Chicago Union laying 3 points on the road at Bree Stevens Field facing the Madison Radicals.
Who beat them last time they played.
Good point.
At Bree Stevens.
Good point. Yeah,
I'm
definitely going to be a little tricky.
I'm inclined to take Madison here.
I kind of am too, although I think maybe we should also learn our lesson from picking against Chicago last week when they not only won the game outright, but they were actually the road dog and they ended up winning the game by 4. So, I don't know. We're going to revisit that one in just a second. All right, our next one here, San Jose visiting the Austin Soul in the first game of a back-to-back weekend for them. Austin is favored by 2 points at home. I feel pretty good about Austin there. We'll talk a little more about that in a second. That's definitely less tricky than the first one.
Yep.
All right, our last game here, Philadelphia at DC. And this one, just, I don't even have to think about this. DC favored -3.5. You smash DC on this one. We'll talk about the specifics as to why in a minute here, but that
we don't need to.
Like
DC is a better team at home. They're going to win by 4. Yeah. Click on DC.
Yeah, without question. And the other piece of it too is you go beyond that. DC has blown out a couple teams this year. They're capable of pulling off those big wins. Philadelphia either wins the game or loses by 6 or 7 plus goals. Like they don't play close in many of their losses. I think their closest loss of the year was against the Thunderbirds, and they lost that one by 3. And that was on the road. So I have a feeling the DC Breeze are at least a point better than the Pittsburgh Thunderbirds. Otherwise, Philadelphia has losses of 12, of 7, 7 again, and then 5 against Atlanta. So, yeah, they lose by 5-plus goals pretty regularly.
Yeah, I think
they
we're
also.
Good here.
Yeah, I think I feel pretty good about that. We don't need to go too much deeper into that. All right, Chicago-Madison. Gosh, this is hard. I'm inclined to pick Madison just because of the line.
The line is pretty steep for Chicago. We know Madison will play them close. I think also Madison's a game behind them in the standings, half a game back of Minnesota. They only
this
have
game matters big time. Like, this
left.
Is not a... Yeah, this yeah, is not this a, is... oh, well, it doesn't matter for one team or the other. Like, this is a big game. I will be interested to see how this shakes out, because as you mentioned already, They won the previous matchup between the two of them. And that's the only game they've played so far this year between those two teams. And it was a 3-point win. Or
No, it's
sorry, no,
not.
it's
No,
not. That's
they've
not correct.
played. Each
Okay, so
team
they've
has a 3-point
split.
win.
Yes, they've split.
And they've each won their home games. This game is in Madison.
Yeah. All right. We're going with the Breeze to cover. I think 3 points they're gonna
The
play within that
Breeze.
3-point merge.
The
That's
Breeze Stevens Field.
Breeze Stevens Fields. I'm picking the field to cover. Just the field. That's it. That's honestly the biggest determining factor for
That
me though, if we're
is.
being honest. I
It
didn't
is.
say that
That's just.
correctly, but
It's the third team you've called the Breeze tonight.
every team is the Breeze if you think about it long enough.
Yeah.
Somehow. Actually, no. There's just like there's a few teams that like they could be, and they're
Yeah.
all the Breeze to me.
Yeah.
All right, Austin, San Jose.
We're
I
picking
feel pretty good
Austin.
about Austin here. This is kind of a must-win game for Austin. San Jose is going to travel. We've seen that Texas road trip be really difficult for a lot of teams. So I think Austin's going to bounce back here with a win. I think they're probably the better team on paper than San Jose is. It's going to be close, though. Like, I don't think it'll be much more than that 2-point margin. It might be a 3-point game.
I still like Austin here. I think very similar to Madison. They need the win to keep their playoff hopes alive. San Diego, I don't think it's technically eliminated yet. Or San Diego, sorry. San Jose.
San Jose.
San Diego
Definitely
certainly
not
not eliminated.
eliminated. Definitely not
San
eliminated.
Jose, no, they're not. I mean, they're 2-4. They
Yeah.
haven't played too many games yet. And you know, the second place team is 6-4. So if they win the next four games, they're tied.
Yeah, theoretically.
I guess, yeah, they play
That
Dallas,
means
so
that
if
would
they
mean that
win
they
those
have to
games, then
play.
they're
Yeah, they have
yeah.
to play against two of those teams right now. So if they
Right.
go 2-0 on the weekend, put them in the playoff conversation. If they go 0-2, that ends their season.
But
So
I think Austin's looking to end their season. So I'm good to pick the
Yeah, I mean,
Soul
they
here.
probably know that. They also know they got to bounce back. They got beat at home by San Diego last week in the second game of back-to-back. So you got to make sure you take care of business here against San Jose. If they lose this game, I mean, Austin's pretty much done. Assuming that Dallas wins on Saturday, the last game doesn't even matter anymore then because Austin will be 2 games back. And so it just becomes a dead rubber match for Dallas. They'll be in the playoffs. So, Austin, to me, this is a must-win game for them. You set up then a potential winner goes to the, winning your end game against the Roughnecks in week 10, if I'm remembering correctly. So yeah, those are our three picks for the week. We're going to pick Madison, cover against Chicago, Austin, cover at home, winning by 2+ goals, or really, I should say, by more than 2 goals because it's a -2 line, against San Jose, and then DC winning by at least 4 goals against the Philadelphia Phoenix. Are we not picking a? We're not going to pick a Canada Cup game this week.
Oh, I didn't even think about it. Yeah.
I
Oh no,
know, I forgot.
I don't think there are Canada Cup games this week.
Oh, you are correct. There are no Canada Cup games this
Yeah,
week. Ignore me. So
normally
yeah, we're not. That's why we're not picking one.
we
Glad you
definitely
mentioned it.
would, but they
Yeah, it's a bit of a rocky slate this week. Not the best slate of games we've seen across the board, and that actually leads us pretty well into our Survivor pool update. And Alex, boy oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about here, because we are down to. I'm gonna double check the numbers real quick to make sure I have this right, but I believe we are down to our final 7 entries.
That's a line.
Yeah, we
A lot
had
of
a bunch of
people.
people. A lot of people rode the Cascades this week, which did obviously not work out very well for them. The Cascades lost by 5 points at home. We had a couple who rode the Spiders as well. Also didn't work. We had one person who clearly was not paying enough attention to the schedule and picked the Austin Soul to win against the LA Aviators. And
Oh,
because the Aviators went 2-0 and the Soul lost their only game, no matter what you wanted to say you tried to pick, you lost. And yeah, so the only people that made it through is we had 6 entries in on the Boston Glory, and we had one on the Chicago Union beating the Windchill. Actually, I want to make sure I have this right here. Because I always do this. There's always one that gets duplicated in here, and I don't know why. But there is that one that gets
props to that one
duplicated.
player for keeping Chicago this late in the season.
I know.
And
Impressive. I was
also
very
for
surprised by
using
that.
it against Minnesota of all teams. It's the one team
Yeah.
that could beat
I
the
know. Well, yeah, I mean, Madison could too, but still, it feels like
Yeah.
that's a bit of a risky one there. All right, so I'm actually wrong. So we're down to our final 6 entries.
Oh.
Because we had five go out on the spider, excuse me, five go out on the Cascades, two go out on the Spiders, and one go out on the Soul, kind of. They just picked the wrong team they're playing, I guess. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Regardless,
It's all
they're out.
lost. Yeah.
So eight entries are out. We're down to our final 6. So we had the Boston Glory, the contingent there. We had five people take them, one takes Chicago. So we're down to our final six teams, our final six entries, I should say. And definitely a couple of easy layups this week if you're looking for survivor pool picks.
Or you could be like me, who's just trolling Chris and type in the Detroit mechanics every week. That way, in case they win, you can say you predicted it.
Yeah, but you didn't actually. But anyway, I mean, easy ones here. Raleigh at home against Pittsburgh. I mean, the last time they played, Raleigh won by 11, and now they're playing at home. The last game was on the road. I feel pretty good about that one. DC, I think they'll win pretty handily against Philadelphia. I don't know if, maybe you want to stay clear of that one. Philadelphia is definitely better than your Tampa Bay's and
For
your
sure. I mean,
Pittsburgh's at this point.
Atlanta plays Pittsburgh also this week.
Yeah, that's an easy one. Second game
Likely
of
a
back
win
to
for
back.
them.
Yeah, I feel pretty
And
good about that. New York playing in Tampa Bay. A little bit tricky because of the trip, but I still think New York wins that one pretty easily.
if Boston can win in Tampa Bay, New York can win in Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Maybe you pick Dallas against San Jose. San Jose play the second game of back to back on the road. But I think you have some slam dunks ones there. I go either Atlanta or Raleigh this week against playing against Pittsburgh, and I don't think you can go wrong. I would be really surprised if Pittsburgh won either of those games. I just don't think they're very well equipped to do so, especially on the road. Doubleheader, just yeah. If you haven't picked yet the Flyers or you haven't picked the Hustle, those are the two the time to use them because they're gonna move on after this week. And yeah, we're down. I mean, we're not giving advice to many people anymore. There's only six people left in the survivor pool, so really getting down to the nitty gritty here. We knew this was going to be a tough week because there weren't a ton of slam dunk picks in week eight. You know what I mean? It wasn't a ton there. So definitely opened up some really fun upsets and yeah, a lot of people knocked out. All right, Alex, we're gonna now get ready for our subscriber only. If you're an AUDL, if you're an Ulti World subscriber, I'm gonna get that right one day and not screw it up like once every third episode. If you're an Ulti World subscriber, first of all, thank you so much for being an Ulti World subscriber. It means a ton to us. Alex and I are going to break down. We will have the final results of our All-Star voting. If you have not voted yet, sorry, you're too late by the time you're listening to this podcast. It will be closed. But we will have the full results. We're going to break down in our Survivor or subscriber only segment. And yeah, I think I'm excited for this, Alex. We're going to draft our teams. We're going to have some fun with this, pick our captains, and put together our rosters here. So I think it's going to be a fun exercise. Also, just giving some props to guys that definitely deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
We'll probably put something out at some point with our full list of. Maybe
we
we'll do
should
that
we
on
oh, I
Twitter.
think we should have a graphic with the two rosters that we pick and who's going to win, because I'm going to pick a better
Yeah.
all-star team than you.
Well, you think so? I actually have some experience with fantasy all-star drafts. I did it back in 2019, and I'd like to say that I
Oh, all
absolutely
right.
crushed it. So
Great.
I could go back and maybe try and find that, but I don't remember. Let's just say that I was the only guy who picked Matt Smith, and Matt Smith went off. I also had Max Shepard, who was the
That's
MVP
a
of the
good
game.
pick. That's the key there.
Just gonna say, I know what I'm doing here when it comes to these all-star games. Anyway, so that's going to just about do it for this episode. As always, feel free to follow along with us on Twitter at Stahl7. You can go check out. I'm sure we'll put out. I don't know who's going to do the graphics for us, but if we get graphics out, that'll be where they are. You can go check them out on our Twitter account there. Feel free to also get your questions in for next week of what you want to ask Brian Jones on Coach's Corner because we had some great listener interaction this past week. We're going to save a few as well. We probably should have mentioned that earlier. We'll save a few because we had so many that came in this week that there's a couple more evergreen ones that we can kick to later weeks in the season if there's not quite as much to talk about. There's just so much for us to break down this week. And as always, remember to rate, review, subscribe. You can find the show pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And if you can't, then go bother Charlie about it because I'm pretty sure he has control over that and I don't. Hey, Alex, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
Well, I earned a roster spot on the club team that I've been trying out for. Very excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. However, the jersey number that I've worn my entire Ultimate career is already
Ooh.
taken by a member of the team. I'm not going to be able to take it from him.
Oh,
So
man.
if anyone has like good stories about why they chose their jersey number and you want to convince me to wear that number, I'm all ears. It can't be
All
number
right.
14. That's one I usually have.
Okay, that's a bummer. That is always tough to figure out. I know this is many, many years ago. I have a story about this one. I the reason okay, so I wear 84 now, pretty much everywhere. My Twitter handle is at cmcglenn84. I've been wearing it for years. But the reason for that is actually Sadie Jastrzewski. So we played together starting in 8th grade. We went to the same middle school and high school. And so we started playing together in 8th grade. And we ended up actually, despite the fact that, I don't know how this happened, despite the fact that Sadie was also playing with us, we somehow both wore the number 11 that year. I don't really know how we got away with that, but we did. So Sadie was number 11. I was also number 11. But Sadie was there first. Sadie had played the previous 2 years. I was new to the team at that point. And so because of Sadie, I ended up having to switch my number. And so I was playing my freshman year of high school. I played on the football team, which, let me tell you, I am not a very good linebacker. I don't know why on earth anybody thought I was ever going to be a good linebacker. The coaches told me they liked my speed on the outside. I'm like, that's great. What do I do when I get there? Because I'm not going to tackle people. That part is a little bit tricky for me. So that did not go super well. But I also played receiver. And so that was where the number 84 came from. And so, I just kind of latched onto it. I figured, you know what, why not? And it's been my number ever since. I've never worn, I think I wore 11 in one other setting. But I also think it's nice to have like an obscure number, like a slightly more obscure number for Frisbee, because like no, I've never had to fight with anybody about getting my number on a team. Like since I've switched to 84, nobody else wears it. I look through club rosters when they come out every once in a while to see if there's anybody else named wearing number
I think
84.
Shane
David
Early for
Richard.
the Spiders.
Oh, does he? For the Spiders? I know that David Richardson does for Raleigh. That's pretty much the only one I know for sure that stands out. But yeah, it's usually I'm by myself there. So I'm not gonna try and sway you to pick 84. My advice to you is find a number that is like your number that is a little bit more obscure that you don't have to worry about other people taking.
All right. I'll come back with a follow-up in a few weeks once we sort all that out.
There's your anecdote, your very long rambling, totally off topic anecdote to end out the show, as we tend to do. So if you're still listening, thanks so much, everybody, and you guys will hear from us again next week.